I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
That ever lived, and you can't teach that. Here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. This is episode 79, and I am furious and hot. But not from last night's Money in the Bank, which I'll bet from a couple mentions maybe here or there, we will not be talking about today. No, that will be later in the week. Which I will coincide with the next episode's topic, which is Money in the Bank 2010, the first of the annual events. No, I'm hot because, I'm hot for different reasons that I'm about to get into, because, a couple things have happened since the last time I put out an episode. The last time I put an episode, it was literally the day before Dominion! In Osaka, Japan, from New Japan Pro Wrestling. So I'm going to talk about that in just a bit. And really, that's what got me hot. And it's good that I'm hot, because it's summertime, and some comments about certain matches, they have my blood boiling, and it's just bad blood. Which is very apropos and fortuitous of me, because today's episode, we will be covering Bad Blood 2003, which features the main event of Triple H versus Kevin Nash and his quads in Hell in a Cell with Mick Foley. But maybe he was Mick Fury in that match, considering how biased he was. That's a whole different story. But Mick Foley as the special guest referee. All that and more in this episode of CMG's Review, but yeah, I'm hot. This is what happens when you are continuing to do research right up to the recording time. I'm hot because I just read a statement from Dave Meltzer. I heard a lot of what he said about the match, but I didn't hear this part, and something he said pissed me off. We start off talking about Dominion, and I was very excited. Here's the honest truth. I'm not probably going to be talking a lot about Dominion. I'm going to be talking about the matches I did remember, and I'm going to be talking about the main event, because, see, what happened was, I stupidly stayed up all night in anxious and anticipation for Dominion, and at some point I started to fall asleep. And, in fact, it was right after the Never Openweight 6-Man Tag Team Championship. And because of that, I have very faint memories of the next four matches. So, I mean, merely my last memory of that morning was waking up and seeing the end of the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship between Kushida and Hiromu Takahashi. I also do remember the ending of the Young Bucks versus Roppongi Vice match. I do want to go back and watch them. I did not watch the Never Openweight Championship or the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, though I did actually see the end of the IWGP Intercontinental Championship when I went to sleep. Because what I did was I was feeling kind of like, I'm not going to be able to stay up for all this. So I turned it off, I went to sleep, I came back up later after I had slept. I put it back on the TV because I had been watching on my living room TV through my laptop. And in the process of setting up, because I wanted to at least watch the IWGP Heavyweight Championship between Okada and Omega. And yes, that's where a lot of the heat is going to come up, but we're going to get there. I did proceed to see the last couple minutes of the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, in which Tanahashi beat Naito with a Texas Cloverleaf for a submission. And I'm sure those matches were good. I'm sure the other matches were good. Just I don't have much memory about them because I was falling asleep. But let's go in order of what I do remember. First, we started with a six-man tag team of basically Young Lions as with David Finlay in the veteran spot as he teamed with Shota Umino and Tomoyuki Oka versus Hirai Kawata, Katsuya Kitamura, and Tetsuhiro Yagi. Kitamura is goddamn frightening. I think he's going to be one of the Young Lions who's going to be making the jump real soon to, like, being pushed. Or at some point in the near future. Because he's been here a long time, so. But it's your standard Young Lions match. With Tomoyuki Oka, I believe, picking up the win with a submission. Then you had an 8-man tag team match that, actually went shorter than the 6-man tag team match. It was Tiger Mask W, Toga Makabe, and Yuji Nagata versus Hiroyoshi Tenzan, Jushin Thunder Liger, Manabu Nakashi, Nakanashi, and Satoshi Kojima. I usually batter with Japanese names to that. Because I have been getting better since I started studying and learning Japanese. But, this was also pretty, standard opening. Let's put a lot of them in an 8-man tag match, and they all have their spots and do their thing. So really nothing special for those first two matches, but they're pretty much the warm-up matches to get people fired up. Then we had one of the matches I was looking forward, because quite honestly, I was looking forward to, Tokyo Latino, as I now know her name is, aka the Bullet Club Bunny Girl, and she was there, and that made my night, that's probably why I started falling asleep after this, because, well, my night is shot, don't got nothing else to look forward to, But in a gauntlet match, basically a repeat match of, this is part of the reason this was called like Wrestle Kingdom 11 2.0, because it was, in this case, this was a direct copy match, except that you added in Suzuki Gun and, instead of, it being David Finlay and Kojima with Ricochet, it was, Ryusuke Taguchi and Juice Robinson as part of Taguchi Japan. I mean, there are a lot of things I love the match. I love Bullet Club. I love, and more importantly, Yujiro Takahashi and, being the Tokyo pimp and coming up with the babes. Just absolutely love it. Along with Bad Luck Fale, Heyman Page. They started off good. They faced Chaos of Tomohiro Ishii, Toru Yano, and Yoshihashi. And I love how Chaos picked the win with Toru Yano getting, you know, being the thief that he is. Then you had Suzuki Gun quickly dispatch them as it was Tachi, Yoshinobu, Kimuro, and Zack Sabre Jr. Just making short work of them. Then you had Taniguchi Japan and all their little comedy bits that I love, and they work so well together. And Taniguchi Japan is quickly becoming one of my favorites. It's starting to possibly rival my love for Los Ingobernables de Japón. But, of course, the last team, the championship team, which is Los Ingobernables de Japón, a.k.a. Bushi, Evil, and Sonata, and are, after some time, able to dispatch Ryusuke Taguchi and retain the never open weight 6-man tag team championship. I really do enjoy these gauntlet matches because they're always fun. They have a lot of comedy bits into them, and they have sort of this good, it's almost like trios wrestling, like trios open tag wrestling in a way. And so it's very fast paced, very action paced, and I very much enjoy it. Now, as I said, after this, I have very faint memories of the next matches, so I'm probably going to add a more later date, maybe later this week when I do the next episode. I'll give a quick rundown, but I don't have much memory of the tag matches, both the IWGP Tag Team Championship and the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Championship. I don't have much memory of Cody versus Michael Elgin, and I don't have much memory of at least definitely two-third of the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, which was Kushida versus Hiromu Takahashi, which, what I saw at the end, absolutely fantastic, and that hoverboard lock with the gym break special combined, wow. Just amazing, like, it made you believe that, yeah, I would tap out to that too. So, and then as I said, the next two, the Never Open Weight Championship and the Lumberjack Death Match, and the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, I did not watch. I only saw the tail end of the Intercontinental Championship in setting up for the next match. So again, I will try to watch those and hopefully talk about those at a later date. That brings us to Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega 2 for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. The match that Dave Meltzer is giving 6.25 stars to. I'm not saying that this match wasn't better than the last match, because I think it was. I thought this match was much better than their last match. I thought there were a lot of great spots. You know, one thing, while they did do the table, they didn't wait long to use it. They took that, and that made it sort of a segment, a part of the match, as part of the storytelling. I thought storytelling was better in this match. And the fact that they did a 60-minute time limit draw, I thought was amazing. This is definitely a match of the year candidate. Mind you, candidate. Now, in general, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm saying all these nice things. I think it's a match of the year candidate. I love that it went to a time-minute draw. It was epic. It had better storytelling, I thought. Had a lot of great sort of segments in integral parts of the story that I very much enjoyed. So why does this match have me hot? And quite honestly, it comes down to what people like Dave Meltzer are doing and what they're saying, and just the overbloating of this and the last match. There is a huge flaw with this match. And I say that in saying that I love Kenny Omega. I think he's a great talent. I think he has a very unique style. It's very interesting to wrestling. I know people that I respect, like Jim Cornette, don't like it. But, you know, I think there's room for everybody. And certainly, you know, I think he's got a great style that can go to the WWE. And you'd be interested to see him there or wherever he is. And the same could be said for Okada. And, you know, Okada's definitely more of a technical wrestler, but he's got some really impactful moves that are filled with charisma. I mean, you know, Rainmaker clothesline, just, it's a simple finish, but it's a great finish. I don't hate these people. But that doesn't mean I'm going to not call them out when there is a huge flaw in a match that everybody seems to want to overpraise and overbloat and how great it is. You know, and I have done, by the way, the same thing for John Cena. I have called out John Cena when John Cena has not been at his best. And if you don't believe me, go back and listen to last year's WrestleCast of, I don't think it was Money in the Bank. It may have been Money in the Bank. I'm not sure. It wasn't Battleground. It was the one right before Battleground, and it was the first meeting between AJ Styles and John Cena. Because if you go back there, I called out John Cena for having ring rust. I called him out for not being in right places, for him not having the right spot. It is recorded. Go to WrestleCast, ask Matty J for the recording. The evidence is there of me saying that John Cena brought the match down. I have been on record for doing that, and I'm going to do it here. I'm sorry. There were selling by Kenny Omega and selling by them, and they did a great job of the exhaustion part. I think that's maybe what people are talking about. They did a great job of selling them being exhausted and just completely out of gas by the end of the match. There's one little problem. At the beginning of the match, Kenny Omega worked on Okada's leg for at least 10 minutes, if not 15. He worked on the leg extensively. He put it in the figure four. He constantly attacked it. He did so much damage to it that it should have been something to where Okada should have been at the very least limping through the entire match. And instead, as soon as he's done and does some counter, Okada maybe limps once, twice, and then starts doing maneuvers that require jumping and require using his leg and his knees. Things like running and doing the body splash or jumping off the top rope. And as Omega went under him, landing on his feet, then rolling through and moving on his legs perfectly fine, delivering drop kicks and kicks and all types of things. As if Omega hadn't worked on his leg for 10 minutes. I respect them selling that they are exhausted, but rather than sit there and bemoan that I'm complaining about him not selling a body part, ask yourself this. How much more epic and realistic would that ending be if, as part of the story that was being told, that part of the reason Okada couldn't get the finish is, while he had a counter for everything Omega was putting at him, he couldn't move as well and as quickly into the cover when he needed to because of his bad knee. Which is something, by the way, the announce team tried to sell early on in the match. It's a huge flaw as part of the match. It would have made that ending so much more epic because in one hand you have Kenny Omega who threw everything, could not get the job done. But at the same time, Okada couldn't finish him because of what Omega threw at him, in particular early in the match of working on the leg. This is basic wrestling psychology 101. And we're giving this match the pass because they've done, because they've done something that hasn't been done in a long time or whatever. I primarily think of it as, you know, there are a lot of fans of Kenny Omega and New Japan Pro Wrestling, and more importantly, who want to stick it to Vince and the corporate atmosphere of WWE, so they're overbloating how great this match is. And they don't. They don't need to overbloat how great this match is. It's a great match. It's a 5-star match. You know, this, it's a, the one at Wrestle Kingdom was 6 stars, and this was 6.25 stars. It's bullshit. And it's complete bias from Dave Meltzer, who, I'm sorry, he knows a lot of things, and he's been in wrestling a long time, but on this, his bias is showing, and it's bullshit. The others who are doing the same thing, I'm sorry, your bias is showing. This is something that we complain that WWE doesn't do. Well, how can we bitch and moan and complain when WWE doesn't do this? But when New Japan does not sell, when Okada does not sell, something that would be integral and make the match that much more epic and bring so much more drama to the match, that we give them a pass. It doesn't make any sense. And I'm sorry, if you want to be considered one of the best matches of all time, then I'm going to hold you to the highest standard I can for professional wrestling. And I will do that for a John Cena match. I have done that for John Cena matches. Hell, you go back, listen to my WrestleMania review. I never said that it was the best match of the card or best match of the night. It was far from it. But at the same time, that wasn't supposed to be a wrestling match. That was a segment. That was a WrestleMania moment segment. That was all designed behind John proposing to Nikki. And it was a lovely segment. It was for those who enjoyed Total Divas and had been enjoying the story and all of that. I'm not going to hold that match to the same standard of a match that's trying to be the greatest match of all time. And that's nothing against Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada. They are wonderful wrestlers, excellent wrestlers, some of the best in the world. It's not a crack on them if it's only 5 stars. It's not. Nor is it going to make their lives better. Nor is it going to get them more money. You know, trust me when I say this, by the way, particularly for Kenny Omega fans. He does not need your help by overbloating how great all of his matches are. Trust me, people know how great his matches are. They don't need to be listed as 6 stars. Like, there are many 5-star matches in my mind that have happened over the years. Each one has their own unique signatures that make people want to watch them. There's something about the Austin Hart epic at WrestleMania 13 that make people go back and watch it, the epicness in particular of that ending, of certain John Cena matches that I believe are 5 stars, from some of the U.S. title matches to his match with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 23, the match against Triple H at 22. There's epicness, there's great storytelling there that I love. It has its own unique signature because of the wrestlers involved. And Kenny Omega's matches have the same thing. They don't need to be overbloated 6 or 6.25 stars by people who obviously have a biased agenda against the WWE, its corporate atmosphere, Vince McMahon, and other things that it needs to be blown up to 6.25 stars. I'm sorry, epic rant kind of over, but I've been wanting to get that off my chest for like 2 weeks now because it drives me insane. And by the way, some of that same sort of bias, internet wrestling community bias, infected, by the way, the people's views, I think, on Money in the Bank. But again, we'll be here all day, and I want to save that for later in the week. It's just, I thought Dominion, for what I saw and what I remember, was a great event. And I know the matches that I missed, and when I go back and watch them, are going to be great. Like some of the endings that I did see, that the entire matches that I didn't get to see, though, I thought were great, and I'm very interested to go back and rewatch them. So I do suggest if you have New Japan World, I mean, why shouldn't you have New Japan World? I mean, again, we should be supporting all our wrestling communities if we can. But, you know, if you have WWE Network, you should definitely go get New Japan World, and, you know, you should watch this. I thought it was a great event. I look forward to watching the rest of the matches finally at some point, hopefully later this week. And you know what? I definitely highly suggest going to watch Okada versus Omega 2 because it was a great match. It's a match of the year candidate. 5 stars. They went 60 minutes for a time limited draw, told an epic story. There's just a huge fatal flaw to that match. I mean, I think I'm being nice because a fatal flaw like that, you know, I wouldn't give it more than 4 stars. Like, that's something that could take an entire point off a match, if not a point and a half. But the energy, the charisma, and the effort that both these wrestlers put can't be denied. But to sit there and say, call it the greatest match of all time, not when it has a major flaw like that. Yeah, this rant is more about the people's bias and Dave Meltzer and others. And again, yes, I know. I'm talking about other people's opinions. Everybody has the right to their opinion. Everybody has the right for their opinion to be wrong as well. And yes, I'm being cocky because I am the most glorious Jew that's ever lived. And this is the reason for it. This integrity that I have. And, you know, people can't deny it. So. Whew! Yeah, go watch the Minion. I mean, despite my beefs, I love the match. Go watch it. So, with that being said, now that that bad blood that I've had quelling in me for 2 weeks is gone, why don't we get to Bad Blood 2003 by WWE? Which had the theme song of Headstrong by Trap, presented by the Raw brand of the WWE Entertainment, and sponsored by Maxim Hair Color for Men. Bad Blood took place on June 15th, 2003, to an attendance of 10,000 at the Compact Center in Houston, Texas. Your commentators were Jerry the King Lawler and the legendary Jim Ross. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Bad Blood 2003.
Circling your head, contemplating everything you ever said. Now I see the truth, I got it down. A different motive in your eyes, and now I'm out. See you later. That's over. I see your motives inside. Decisions to hide.
Couple of notes before we get into the review proper, though. Bad Blood is the event that actually introduced us to the Hell in a Cell. The original Bad Blood in 1997 was an In Your House, which featured, and that was, but it took place in December and featured the first ever Hell in a Cell match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. And the thing about both Bad Blood pay-per-views, because there's only two, one in 2003, the other one in 2004, both featured Hell in a Cell matches as their main event. So I thought that was something that was very interesting, that Bad Blood is an event, I guess you can call it a precursor to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, since it was All three times the pay-per-view had a Hell in a Cell match. I thought that was a very interesting sort of little factoid. One thing I'm going to sit here and say that this pay-per-view, or at least it hinders it, is that a lot of this is storytelling. Like, these matches, I think, would have felt a bit more to me had I been watching the story for weeks. And, like, and I do remember, like, I had to go back to my own memory of these storylines because, for instance, the World Tag Team match is part of the storyline that that ultimately led to Kane unmasking. There's a Christian storyline going through, really the start of Captain Charisma there. Scott and Tess storyline. But at the same time, like, if you haven't been watching it for weeks, it's not as well in your head. And that's sometimes something that pay-per-view does. And in particular, summer pay-per-view that is part of a larger storyline. This is something I think Money in the Bank last night was as well, as to where it's part of this larger story, and so you don't always get satisfying endings as well. But, you know, here nor there, there's that. So I definitely think this was definitely more of a storyline type of pay-per-view, to where it, the pay-per-view involves you needing to know the storylines. Some they did better jobs than other at telling that story in the little vignettes before the matches, in particular the main event matches, but that's here or there. But let's start off with these two things first. One, there was a match on Sunday Night Heat. Ivory defeated Molly Holly. And the other thing, to get it out of the way, sort of a positive thing, was the Redneck Triathlon. This was fun in so many ways. Because it's funny and being stupid funny. Like, sometimes you need stupid funny. The burping contest, absolutely ridiculous. The pre-recorded burps. Compared to Eric Bischoff's real burps, it's like, what am I watching? Then we come to T-Dub's favorite segment, the Poondang Pie, where Mae Young came out to feed Eric Bischoff his Poondang Pie, which, you know, so you had Austin winning the burping contest. And the funniest thing, to where, you know, they made an agreement because Eric Bischoff had gotten all these girls for the Poondang Pie, but Austin made a deal. He could go first if he could pick the pie favor, and he didn't pick any of them. Instead, he picked Mae Young. Oh, this segment. I love it. Because it's fucking hilarious. So, Eric Bischoff gets a face full of Poondang Pie. King, who's in the ring, is like, oh my god, what is happening? But then Eric, after dealing, like, alright, your turn, Austin, is like, I quit. And allowed himself to lose. Then stuns Mae Young, and Mae Young's like sitting there, like, having a, I got somebody to eat my Poondang Pie. And the best part is afterwards, King, sees where her skirt, where she had ripped off her skirt, because one of those, like, rip-off, like, sort of skirts divas have, that, you know, the rip-apart ones, gets it, and, like, tiptoes over, trying not to look, and lays it over her hips. It's those little bits of comedy, which are so appreciated, and make it so hilarious. And then it leads to, God, what was the last one? I know what technically, the last one was a singing contest, to which Eric Bischoff tried to pre-record, or I should say lip-sync, his own song. Austin called him out on it. He couldn't sing well. So Austin said, why don't we have one more spin and re-spin it? Okay. And I can't remember if Bischoff looked away or not, but in classic Austin fashion, it wasn't really a real spin. He just moved it to the Pigpen match. It was like, oh, look at this. It's the Pigpen match. I mean, the first person to throw the other person in the Pigpen wins. Which means Austin could technically put his hands on Bischoff. And boy, did Austin kick Bischoff's ass. And again, it going back to... This is what I'm talking about. Like, if I had been watching this storyline for weeks, it probably would have been that much more enjoyable. Because, again, this was the comeuppance of somebody from weeks of storyline telling. In this case, I'm just watching the pay-per-view. So, while Bischoff is... You know, again, you can go there and see that, obviously, that Bischoff's a bit of an ass. And, you know, think that, yeah, he deserves this. It's not as much as wanting to see him get it after weeks and weeks of having to deal with his bullshit. So, that's missing from it. But, you know, that's what happens when you're just watching the pay-per-view. It's still exhilarating from what I remember of Eric, of the character, though. So, it was, in this case, it was a good nostalgic memory of watching him get his ass kicked and thrown into the big pen. Going to the matches proper, get Rodney Mack and Christopher Nowinski with Theodore Long versus the Dudley Boys. This is, I think, a very good warm-up tag team match that got the crowd into it. I like that Mack and Nowinski got the win. I like that it's sort of a psychology because before... Again, this is where that storytelling comes into evolve and... You know, again, Rodney Mack's character was all, with Theodore Long, was all about, you know, getting theirs, and there was sort of a racial component to it. And Nowinski kind of was what would, I think, be called now a white knight or a social justice warrior. You know, and again, bringing up the whole point was like, Devon, why do you have to get the tables? And using that sort of question to put a spark of possible division between Devon and Bubba. And using that to pick up a roll-up win. Well, roll-up win after hitting Devon with metal, the metal face thing that he had in the face because he had just had nose surgery. Or reconstructive nose surgery. So, again, classic heel components there, and I thought a good warm-up match, but again, I keep going back to it, it's like, so much of the match is roiled in story, and for some of the smaller matches here, some of the first ones that we're going on to, they don't really tell, because they don't really have a lot of vignettes for that, they just go into it, so for those, you don't have the story retold to you, as opposed to the last three matches. Again, we'll get to that. Then you had Scott Steiner versus Test for Stacy Keibler's managerial services. Now, I actually enjoyed this match a whole lot more, and part of the reason was Test Dickery. Again, here's where this match overcomes that storytelling element. Because even if you've not watched the story for the past, oh, I don't know, so many weeks, the way Tess was treating Stacy and just being an absolute sexist ass, you wanted to see him get his ass kicked. And you wanted to see Scott Steiner get her services. Because like, I honestly couldn't remember who won. Because I went into this without looking up the results. But like I'm like, oh, I hope Scott Steiner... I couldn't remember who... If Scott Steiner got the service, I remember he did get the services at one point, but I couldn't remember if Tess got him at one point first and then he got it back, which unfortunately they didn't go anywhere. And this is the thing, like, the lead up to this match was well done. What they did with this story afterwards was not. I do remember that much. But yeah, it was a very solid match with two big hosses just hitting each other. Scott Steiner, you know, Scott Steiner may be crazy, but, you know, he can put in some good matches when he wants to. And I think this is one of Scott Steiner's better matches. Definitely in the WWE. Him and Tess, I thought, had great chemistry, and I very much enjoyed it. And, you know, there was drama, there was intensity, there was some excitement for who was going to win. So I actually very much enjoyed that match. I also enjoyed the other match, Booker T versus Christian for the WWE Intercontinental Championship. That's how it ended. I liked it because starting a Captain Charisma. This was, I think, after Christian's storyline with DDP, which led him to getting the Intercontinental title at Judgment Day, which we reviewed. In fact, yeah, we did review it because we reviewed it. I can't remember when we reviewed that. It's the same Judgment Day that featured Brock Lesnar versus Big Show, where he tried to kill him with a forklift. Huzzah! And I do believe also the Tori Wilson Sable Bikini Classic. It always comes back to boobs. Hajime Maste, Watashi wa Name Thomas Mattis. Little hobbies or profess little wrestling to anime to manga to video game to oppai daisuki desu. I don't know if I'll ever be able to speak full Japanese, but I'll at least be able to tell people my name and what my hobbies are. Somewhat. Anyways, going off embarrassment. Where was I? Booker T and Christian. One, glad to see Booker, considering the recent events of WWE and Hometown Heroes, it's good to see Booker T technically get a win in his hometown. But I thought it was a solid match. Had a back and forth element that I really enjoyed, but at the same time, Booker T was definitely seen as the stronger of the two wrestlers, but Christian really playing the heel role of the squirmy heel, just continuing being out of everything, and ultimately having to, you know, I believe he struck Booker T with the title to get disqualified. There was this great moment where he tried to walk out, and the referee said, basically, I've been advised that if you walk out, you will lose and forfeit the title to Booker T. And then, of course, he hit him and got disqualified. So I thought that was a really, really solid match. I mean, there's not much more of it. Again, it's that story element. Like, this was built upon weeks of story of Booker T challenging. And more importantly, it was built upon a story that started at Judgment Day, where Christian screwed Booker T out of the title after Booker T had rightfully won it. So it's this build of story. So this is just another notch in that story. Then we have a tag team match for the World Tag Team Championship. La Resistance, Rene Dupree versus Sylvain, and not versus, but and his partner, Sylvain Grande, versus Rob Van Dam and Kane. I thought this was the weakest match of the card. It was this, outside of the Sunday Night Heat match, it was actually the shortest match of the card. And, I mean, RVD is great and everything. Part of the problem is that they have Law of Resistance win. Law of Resistance gets totally dominated, and it's only by a slight mistake where RVD accidentally hits Kane and hits him into the ramp and onto, like, one of the lights, I guess, knocking him out, which then led to Law of Resistance hitting their double-team finishing move and picking up the win. But I really just didn't believe that Law of Resistance win it. So the match just, its entire self felt very weak. I mean, I guess the match is only important since the story element, and that's, again, remembering that this is part of that larger story, to which ultimately led to Kane versus RVD, where RVD beat him, and Kane had to unmask. So, yeah, you had that. Then we move on to our next match. And our next match... these were sort of the three main events. And our next match is as I... Sorry, it's getting a bit dark. And I had to turn on the lights here. Our next match... again, was the first to feature a vignette telling the story. In this case, the story being told... It's Goldberg versus Chris Jericho. This was during Goldberg's run. And I think this is one of Goldberg's better matches of this run. Quite honestly, I actually very much enjoyed Goldberg's 2003 run. I guess I'm that only one. I didn't think it was the greatest run ever, but... I don't have the doom and gloom of it that other people have. And definitely with this match, I thought... This was a really good match. You had the whole history between Jericho and Goldberg that dates back all the way to WCW that did a great job in the vignette of retelling. They had the story of Lance Storm trying to run him over by orders of Jericho and him gaining revenge on Lance Storm and on Christian and decimating them on his road to Jericho. Then you had this match itself, and I thought the match went really well. I thought it was actually really good. I thought they told a great story. It went longer than most Goldberg-Jericho matches. I mean, even though it was 10 minutes, they still told a great story in that 10 minutes of, here's this unstoppable force who's hunting down Jericho. He's beating him up. He's outside. He tries to spear him through the barricade. Jericho dodges. Goldberg hurts his arm, and that allows the best in the world at what he does, the GOAT, and the master of the list and it, to, you know, work on his shoulder, work him over, and try to get the win. But Goldberg at the end overpowering, and the great thing, it wasn't like he just lifted him up like he hadn't had his shoulder work on. Goldberg did sell that his injured shoulder was affecting him. He couldn't get him up at first for the jackhammer. But he finally then fought through that pain. And that's something, again, it's one thing to sit there and say that, like, you know, I mock people for not selling. But it's one thing to, you know, no sell a shoulder and just do a move. It's another thing if you're selling the shoulder and you're selling that you're having to fight through the pain, and ultimately fighting through that pain ultimately gets you that win. That's something that Goldberg did here. I don't think people recognize that. He did sell the shoulder. And while he did still use it to hit the jackhammer, he had to fight through the pain. And I thought they did a great job telling that. Him and Jericho, I thought, had a really great match. It's actually one of my favorite matches on this card. And... I thought it was a really solid, really good match. So, I really enjoyed it. And again, here's where they overcame those storytelling deficiencies. And this can be said, same can be said for all the rest of the matches here, because they all had little vignettes that told the story of what led up to this match and everything. And that helped you fill in the gaps that you need to understand and have a bit more investment in the match. So I thought Jericho and Goldberg had a really great match. I really enjoyed it. Really solid. It wasn't just Goldberg low rolls over everybody. Goldberg looked strong, but Jericho looked like a master manipulator and a skilled veteran who could take advantage of situations. I thought both wrestlers looked strong, and I really enjoyed it. Speaking of really enjoying it, we had it was WrestleMania 24, 2004, 25 was 1, 6 was 2, 7, 8, this is a 5-year preview of WrestleMania 24. As Ric Flair faced Shawn Michaels. I really enjoyed this match. These were two great ones, just showing off their craft. Shawn Michaels was coming back and having this wonderful match with Ric Flair. I mean, this was part of, like, his first year back. And just excellent. Shawn Michaels was really strong. Looked like he was definitely the better of the two, being that he was younger and everything, and in that heart. But Ric Flair showing his resilience, and even his age, he was, you know, being the dirtiest player in the game. It wasn't just some nickname given to him. He was the dirtiest player in the game. The elbow drop after, mind you, after Randy Orton tried to get involved, because this is during the beginning, by the way, of Evolution, where he comes out of the crowd, and you think he has to jump on Shawn Michaels, and the Sweet Chin Music out of nowhere. And then that followed up by the elbow drop off the top rope through Ric Flair, driving Ric Flair through a table. I loved everything about it. The only thing I didn't like was I didn't like the finish. And that's because I think it took away from the match. I mean, well, it was a great heel maneuver, and it got a lot of heat on Randy Orton. And I guess it definitely did help build Randy Orton as this cocky young wrestler of the so-called future. But at the same time, it's like, it's disappointing because you wanted to see the end of it, and I guess we had to wait 5 years for that end. But yeah, a good match. Iffy on the ending, but I guess it's all right. I think I'm just overthinking that. Very solid match. Wonderful match. Definitely one of the matches of the night. Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels just put on an absolute clinic. And that leads us to our last match of the night. Triple H versus Kevin Nash. Oh, and by the way, the special guest referee was not, what did I say earlier? So it's Mick Foley. I can't even remember the joke I made earlier. Because where, Mick Rowley. Mojo Rawley. No, it's Mick Foley. Now I'm trying to remember the joke, and then you want to go pause the podcast and go back and listen to what I said. It's not important. It's Rick Riley. It's Rick Rowley. No, it's Mick Foley. It's Triple H versus Kevin Nash in a Hell in a Cell for the World Heavyweight Championship. And there's a huge problem with this match. This is supposed to be this epic blood feud, and it just went slow. It went slow. I don't feel like Kevin Nash did a lot. I'm sure he couldn't do a lot because he's still recovering from surgery, from quad surgery. Because, you know, every time Kevin Nash walks, he tears a quad. Haha. That joke's getting old. But yeah, it just felt very slow. It also felt like it was, like, the Hell is supposed to be this match where it's a bloodbath because of the Cell. But when they're bringing out hammers and stuff like that, and Barbie, because only because Mick Foley is there, and it's like some of the blood just definitely felt unnecessary. Like, I felt like there should have been a lot more use of the cage. I would have liked to see a lot more. And I know the Hell in a Cell is supposed to be this brutal just fight, but I would like to see a bit more fighting in the ring. And just, it felt like they were definitely overcompensating a lot for maybe Kevin Nash's disabilities at that current time due to the recent surgery or whatever. But it just, whatever the reason, and I don't want to sound like I think it was definitely Kevin Nash's fault, because I don't think it was Kevin Nash's fault. This is a very much more slow, methodical Hell in a Cell that was a lot more weapons-based. A lot of interference from Mick Foley, which I actually don't think helped the match. I actually think it took away from the match. And I hate to say that, because I like Mick Foley, but I thought it took away from it. The part that I liked the most, though, was the ending to where it's a thing to where slip through somehow Triple H, after taking the Jackknife Powerbomb, kicks out, him showing his testosterone fortitude, and then slipping out, hitting the pedigree, or hitting him with the sledgehammer, then hitting the pedigree, and Mick Foley having to sit there and count the 1, 2, 3, brought a lot of heel. I thought that was a great part of the match, because I love sort of that where, like, Mick Foley had to count three, even though he didn't want to, and as a sort of not wanting to acknowledge that Triple H is the best, but having to because of the situation. I think it's one of the things that actually did make Triple H become seen as, like, yeah, he was a great heel wrestler, but he was a great heel wrestler who fought his own battles. Yeah, he'd get interference and that stuff, but, like, unlike somebody like JBL or maybe even Jinder Mahal, he was somebody who looked to fight as much of his own battle as he could and rely on himself as much as he could. I mean, he's the one who brought the hammer. Your mileage may vary, but it's just like, it was just a bit too slow. I think there were spots where it was just lacking in action. Especially for a match that's supposed to be these two former friends wanting to kill each other. I do think that shows, though, that they have a lot of faith in each other and the things that they allowed to do to each other. Like Triple H allowing Kevin that. There's a point where they put Barbie in the corner and allowing Triple H to, like, throw his head into the Barbie thing, which is stacked in the corner. It's like, whoo! Yeah, and these are supposed to be friends, ladies and gentlemen. So, I guess that's my views on all the matches. Top moments of the night. It's quite easy. Goldberg going through the missing Jericho and going through the barricade. That was a big moment. Because I think, and the fact that they were able to use that moment as part of the match also is part of the reason I have it at number 3 on my list. I'm going to cheat, though, a lot here. No, I'm not, actually. Number 2, Shawn Michaels, the elbow drop onto Flair through the table. I thought I'd have to list 2 Stone Cold moments, but Shawn Michaels, the elbow off. And it was from the opposite. It wasn't like the table was set up right onto the top. And mind you, the table was set up outside. I don't think I mentioned that. So the table was set up outside, and it was closer to one ring post. He actually went to the other ring post on that side and did the elbow drop through Flair, through the table, who was on the outside. So that's a big drop. That was a big spot that I liked. But my number one spot is just because I know that T-Dub, a.k.a. TWK, it's his favorite spot in the world, because he loves himself some both Mae Young and some Poontang Pie. Is Mae Young feeding Eric Bischoff her Poontang Pie? Because goddamn you, WWE. I guess at least top 3 matches. And, you know, I'm going to sit here and say that for me, number 3 was Scott Steiner and Test, because it had a very satisfying ending to it, and it had intensity to it, and I actually really enjoyed it. Number 2, Goldberg versus Jericho, and this was very close for me, because I like this in the number 1 match, both. To me, they're very equal, but it's just, the other one went longer, another one felt a bit more epic, even though I didn't like the ending. But yeah, I thought this was a great storytelling match of Goldberg and Jericho, ending a great feud that had started in WCW. But my number one match, because it's 2 of the greats going at it, Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels. Can't suggest either of those 2 matches enough. overall, Bad Blood is not the greatest pay-per-view. And I mean that in saying that, again, no storytelling elements. If you're just watching this pay-per-view on its own, you're missing those storytelling elements. And it really does hurt the pay-per-view. You add a not as epic as it could be main event that was very slow, not as methodical, and just felt overly bloody than it needed to be. And bloody by weapons, but rather bloody by weapons rather than by the cage itself. It just didn't. It felt more like they were surrounded by a cage rather than they had descended into hell. And so you have that subpar main event, that's supposed to be the ending of a blood feud between Triple H. You add it with a lot of the matches, in particular the beginning matches, not having the storytelling element there, because it required people to have been watching, and that's hard to recreate for a crowd that's just watching this pay-per-view. This was 2003, so 14 years later, it's not a great pay-per-view, but it's not a bad pay-per-view. The fact of the matter is, I think all the matches are solid. It's hurt because, again, the subpar main event. But the opening match was a good warm-up match. Scott Steiner and Test is way better than it deserves to be. Booker T and Christian put on a good match. I'll bet Christian winning by disqualification. And you have La Resistance defeating Kane and RVD in a very short match that's the worst of the night. But again, not because he did anything bad, but just because Law of Resistance looked weak in it. But then you had Goldberg and Jericho, I think surprising everybody, having a really, really good match. Not surprising me, but I think wrestling critics. Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels put on a classic. The Redneck Triathlon was a lot funnier than I thought it would be. I think this is an underrated pay-per-view. Not by much. There are definitely things wrong with it. It's not great, but it's not awful. It's not even bad. It's good. It's a good, solid pay-per-view that is in that vein of being sort of part of that summer storytelling session as we build towards SummerSlam. And I think that's what Bad Blood 2003 was. So, final rating for Bad Blood 2003 is I give it a solid 3 out of 5. Maybe the entire pay-per-view isn't worth watching. If you want a good laugh, watch the Redneck Triathlon, but it's not a must. But I definitely suggest watching Goldberg and Jericho and Flair and Michaels. They're definitely solid. If you want to look into, because Scott Steiner is coming out on TNA, if you want to look at some of Scott Steiner's stuff in WWE, his match with Test here is solid. There are better Hell in the Cells, definitely, so I wouldn't suggest this Hell in the Cell, but I still think it's a solid pay-per-view, and I think it's a great snapshot of the time. So, Bad Blood 2003 gets a 3 out of 5 from the most glorious Jew. And that is it for this episode. As I made mention, I hope to later in the week, definitely later in the week, I'm going to have both a review of last night's Money in the Bank so that I can formulate all my thoughts, because I know last night was very controversial in many ways, along with a review of Money in the Bank 2010. Remember to check out all the other stuff from Shin Tiger Kuro and John Ramos on the Absolution Network at www.an.132productions.com. Check all that stuff out. And so until next time, remember, I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and you can't teach that. Why? Because I'm CM Jew. Recognize.
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, I believe without too negative a deep. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but